Call all hands. Beat to quarters. Man out the guns. Stand by the starboard battery.
One broadside into it, if you please, Captain Bush.
Pointers on target. Linstocks ready.
Aye, aye, sir. Ready.
Fire!
Michael Redgrave as C.S. Forrester's Indomitable Man of the Sea, Horatio Hornblower.
To smile at the worries which beset me as an ambitious and conscientious captain trying to muster a crew for the Sutherland. But those difficulties were real and painful enough then. I stared gloomily from the window of my lodging house and listened to Lieutenant Bush as he read my carefully worded proclamation to the small and highly derisive crowd of loungers in the market square.
Men of spirit, seamen, landsmen, and boys who wish to strike a blow for freedom and make the Corsican tyrant wish he'd never dared the wrath of these British Isles. His Majesty's ship, Sutherland, of 2 decks and 74 guns, is at present commissioning at Plymouth, and a few vacancies still exist to complete her crew. Who wishes for a handful of golden louis d'or for prize money? There will be fiddlers and dancing every evening, and provisions at 16 ounces to the pound.
Yes, what about tack?
The best of beef, the best of bread, and grog at midday every day of the week. Addition to the pay under the warrant of His Most Gracious Majesty King George.
Pay? Pay what pay?
Yes, you can hang if you ask for it.
When's my man gonna get paid?
Many frigate captains recruited. And frigates always attract men more than a ship of the line, sir.
No, Bush. They've better chances of prize money.
Well, I'll have to send 4 lieutenants each with 6 men round the southern counties. I don't care what you find, volunteers or pressmen, but I need another 50 seamen and 200 landsmen and boys. If I don't complete my crew, it means the loss of the command. You see to it, Bush, hmm?
Aye, aye, sir.
Master-at-Arms wishes to report, sir.
What more indiscipline? He has my orders to flog the skin off any mutinous seaman. I'll have no unrest at the start of a new commission.
Well, I don't think he's that, sir. Why? Why, look, here he comes now, sir. What a queer-looking lot of men he's got with him, sir.
Well, good heavens, what creatures are these? Handcuffed together, some are in leg irons, all in rags. What are they doing on my ship?
Off it!
What the
devil is this?
You answer. I signed a receipt to the sergeant. What brought him?
Soldiers? Where did these scarecrows come from?
Exeter Assizes, sir.
Huh?
I got a list, sir. Four of them poachers. That one in moleskin breeches, his name's Waits. He's a sheep stealer.
Oh, is he?
The one in black was a brewer's manager before he was took for bigamy. The others is mostly larceny, sir. Except for them two in front, what's in for rick burning, and the two in irons, they're robbery with violence. 30 of them altogether, sir.
And they've chosen service at sea instead of their sentences. Fine addition to my ship's company. Budding mutineers, sulky ruffians, half-witted yokels. Still, hands they are, and I must make the most of them. Might be worth trying to win their affection. Look, why are they handcuffed? Release them at once.
Beg pardon, sir. I didn't like to do without orders, seeing what they are.
Never mind what they are. They're in the king's service now, and I'll have no man in irons in my ship unless he's given me cause to do it.
No, sir.
These men are recruits in an honorable service with an honorable future before them. Now listen, men. Any man who does his duty as best he can has nothing to fear in this ship and everything to hope for. Now I want to see the dirt of the place you've come from washed off. Dismiss. Rice, find one of the purser's mates and see that these men are properly dressed.
Aye, aye, sir.
Oh, Mr. Bush, that's another 30 anyway. I think I've won some of them over. Well, my private opinion is they've made a bad bargain. They'd be better off in jail.
See the carrier backbones, too, if you've got any. God help us trying to make sailors of you. You'll likely finish up overside with a shot at your feet before we make our sent. And a good job, too.
Thompson! What's the meaning of this?
Beg your pardon, sir. We're cleaning the prison dirt and fleas off them. But none of them ain't ever had a bath in their lives, and they won't get under that pump, sir.
I won't have those men cowed, Thompson, and I won't tolerate bullying. One day, all our lives may depend on their loyalty. Clean them by all means, but no bullying. Here, I'll speak to them. Look, under the pump with you, men. It won't hurt you. When we get to sea, you'll see me under that pump every morning at 7 bells. Isn't that so, you others, huh?
Yes, sir. All right.
You there, your name's Waits, isn't it? Now, set them an example. Under you go. Come on.
Yes, sir.
Come here, Thompson. Is that welt on Waits' shoulder from your knotted rope?
Well, sir, I had to use my starter a bit, sir.
Now, understand this. I won't have a petty officer on my ship who doesn't know when to use a starter and when not to. I'm not soft, but those men are bewildered, and hitting them won't clear their heads. Another mistake of this kind, and I'll disrate you. Now, get forward before I have you flogged in front of these jailbirds. So it went on. All the worries of preparing for sea, re-rigging, re-victualling, wondering whether I could man my ship in time. And other worries, too. Mariah, my wife, was with me in my lodgings. Tearful, cloying, affectionate. She had whispered to me that it was possible we were going to be parents again. A new worry for me to take with me to sea. And I felt guilty because... Well, because I was just over the shock of the news that Lady Barbara Wellesley, over whom I'd nearly made a fool of myself aboard the Lydia, had suddenly married Admiral Layton, the man under whom I was now serving. Had my appointment been due to her benevolent influence, or was it a subtle revenge out of pique? I asked myself the question anew when a boy brought a letter to my lodgings, addressed to my wife and me. The Angel in Plymouth, May 4th, 1810. Rear Admiral Sir Percy and Lady Barbara Layton
would esteem it an honor if Captain and Mrs. Horatio Hornblower would dine with them at this address tomorrow, the 5th, at 4 o'clock.
My dear, it's almost a command. We must accept. Oh, and I've only my blue sack gown.
Oh, it looks perfect on
you. Oh, that's what you say about everything I wear. Tell me, is she very genteel?
No. Who genteel?
Well, Lady Barbara, of course.
Oh.
She traveled home from Panama with you and the Lydia, didn't she?
Oh, yes. Well, she's Lord Wellington's sister, you know. She's a very charming woman. I must go down to the ship, my dear.
Oh, Horatio, must you?
Horatio,
oh, I was hoping we could spend the afternoon
yes,
together.
I'm sorry, there's so much to be done, so much to think about.
Oh. Marries Sir Percy Layton. She doesn't love him.
Huh? How do you know that? Who said she doesn't love him?
Nobody said so, dear. But a woman doesn't need to be told these things. Why, it's obvious in her every look and gesture. It is strange. For a woman in her position has no need for social climbing.
I suspect it was a political marriage.
Oh.
The Layton votes will be valuable to the Wellesleys if anything happens to the poor old king, and then there would be a regency, and, well, the Wellesleys are almost the only faction left with the will to carry on the war against Bonaparte. They'll need all the support they can get.
I don't understand these things, but she is a very charming woman, as you said.
Mm.
She asked if I was to accompany you on this voyage, but I explained that with the the hopes we're beginning to cherish, it would be inadvisable.
What? You told her that?
Well, yes, dear. Why should I not?
Oh, no. No reason why not. Of course, well, it's a shame you can't come, but, well, never mind. I'll be back with a bag full of guineas for prize money before 2 years are up.
2 years? Oh, it is a lifetime. Horatio, how is the commissioning proceeding? Have you enough men in stores?
Nothing like enough. I need 50 more topmen, and topmen are not to be picked up out of jails. The flagship Pluto and the Caligula are almost ready to sail, and the East India convoy, which we're to escort, are already assembling. I can't see how we're to be ready in time.
Don't worry so, dear. You've never failed yet.
Look, I could spend all my next quarter's pay on stores and still not have bought too much. The Sutherland already shows my poverty. She's been painted by the dockyard in their usual niggardly fashion. Other captains pay out of their own pocket for white and red and gold leaf. I must be content with the dockyard, dull yellow and black.
I only wish I could live more cheaply so that you could spend more on your ship.
Oh, no. Don't reproach yourself, my dear. No economies that you could make would buy the pigs and fowls and sheep that I need, let alone the luxuries I must provide for entertaining other captains or perhaps the Admiral himself. Mm-hmm. Apples, cigars, raisins, cheese, port, sherry, Madeira, peppers, cloves, allspice, prunes, figs, a chest of tea, wax candles, a dozen shirts, 4 more pairs of silk stockings. Oh, I could go on endlessly. Oh. Well, let's go to sleep, my dear. The problem will keep till tomorrow.
The Forster! I said the Forster!
Use landsman's terms to them, Harrison. They're not seamen yet. They don't know what a mast or belay means.
The lubbers don't know what anything means, sir. Hey, stop! I said jibber, it's not sea scam, my blast, you empty yokel. Hey, you call me pesky. You're not in the tin mine now. It's brain you want, not brawn. What? You'd raise your hand to me, would you? Get up, you mutinous pig, before I kick your face in. Here, where's my rope turned out, sir?
I don't think we'll ever make seamen of some of them, sir.
Shall I arrest that Cornishman for attempting to strike a superior, sir?
No, Mr. Bush. He's too raw to realize what mutiny entails. At the moment, Harrison's method is best. After a week or two, they'll settle down a bit, I hope.
They'd better, or there'll be some floggings or hangings.
I'll keep the man at it, Mr. Bush. I shall go below and study my orders.
Sent me to say the last of the stores are coming aboard, sir.
Oh, very well, thank you. Wait a moment. You're Midshipman Longley, aren't you? Mr. Gerard's nephew?
Yes, sir. My first boy, sir.
Ah. Well, Mr. Longley, attend to your work and do your duty, and well, you may be a captain someday. Oh, very well. Tell Mr. Bush I'll be out presently.
Yes, sir.
Hey, Mr. Longley.
Yes, sir.
Come inside, boy. Well, come in, stand still. What was it you said last?
I said, sir, that Mr. Bush...
No, no, no. What did you say last?
Last, sir? Oh, I said, yes, sir, sir.
Well, and what ought you to have said?
Aye, sir.
Very good. Well, remember that. You have a certain quickness of understanding. You learn how to handle men and... You'll make a useful warrant officer. You may go.
Aye, sir.
When I went up to the quarterdeck a few moments later and gave Bush the order to make sail, I found the decks in a horrible muddle as the officers drove the wretched crew, made more stupid than usual with weariness, to the mizzen rigging.
Just look at the lubbers. 9 minutes already. Why, the Marines are better sailors.
The wind is back easterly. Rounding Devil's Point will not be easy.
No, sir. Race those yards, round! Ah, well up, sir.
Fools of transports, Mr. Bush, scattering before the wind as if they actually wanted to be snapped up by a privateer.
Uh-huh.
The flagship shortening sail, get our royals in.
Aye, aye, sir.
Flagship, signal, sir. It's the Caligula. Make more sail. Take station ahead of convoy.
Oh. Yeah, it's Captain Bolton who's got that job and unknown.
He'll have to run down to hailing distance and perhaps fire a gun before those transports are begging any notice of him. Well, I'll be damned. Now, the Indiamen are shortening sail, and as though the convoy wasn't scattered enough.
Admiral signaling for the Indiamen, sir. Make sail.
I'll bet he's raving mad, sir. But you can't court-martial them. But those India captains make £5,000 out of a voyage. What do they care about an admiral?
I'll make the mind of Haver in command. Night coming on, and the convoy scattered almost before it started. Showing to the best advantage, as I considered it, it was his duty to keep the convoy together, whatever the difficulties, I felt a cold chill spring to my forehead and a slight trembling in my legs. I knew what was coming. It happened at the start of almost every voyage, but I loathed and feared it. I would not give in. I would not.
Another signal, sir. Next ship to Sutherland. Take night station.
Very well. Acknowledge. Mr. Bush, take...
Aye, sir. Quarter mile to windward of convoy, sir.
Look out, sir. Oh, I
thought you were going to fall.
Yes, I've not quite found my sea legs, Mr. Bush. I've been ashore too long.
Lord Nelson was just the same, sir. For the first day of each voyage, he'd stumble like a baby. Talk about feeling ill, sir. Oh.
My resistance was at an end.
Blindly, drunkenly, I staggered to the companion rail, lurched down to the half deck, and along to the door of the after cabin. Paul Wheel, my steward, was laying dinner at the table.
Get out, Paul Wheel.
Are you feeling all right, sir? Can I do anything for you, sir?
Yes, Paul Wheel, you can obey an order.
What's that, sir?
Get out.
Horatio Hornblower, starring Michael Redgrave, is based on the novels by C.S. Forrester. Music composed and conducted by Sidney Torch. Produced by Harry Allen Towers.